Hello, and welcome into the Emergent Podcast, brought to you by Emergent Software. I'm Derek Jacobs. I'm your host, and I'm super excited about today's episode. It's going to be awesome. It's a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a while because I've been seeing it a lot lately on social media and in the news, and that is all about AI, especially in the realm of software engineering. Let's get started. Cool. Now we're joined by Mark Badgema. He is the Chief Technology Officer at Emergent Software. He has a lot of background in software and database development. And right now, he does a lot of work recruiting and vetting prospects to be software engineers. So he has a ton of experience in kind of what it takes to be a high-level software engineer, the experience someone needs, the skill sets you need. And he says, when we talked beforehand, he says he's really focused on growing the company. You know, who isn't trying to grow their company, right? So he was the perfect guest to talk about how AI affects jobs in software development. There, you know, if you've been on LinkedIn at all in the past several months, you know, and tons of blog articles written about how AI will affect software engineers' jobs. And some people say, you know, hey, this is Armageddon, right? We're all going to lose our jobs because now computers are going to do it. And, you know, we need to find new career paths, right? And some people are a lot more optimistic. And Mark is one of those people who says that not only will AI help software engineers do their job, it will actually increase jobs, right? They will actually go up. So Mark, hey, how you doing today? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Derek. Yeah, I'm doing great. It's good to be here. I'm excited to talk about software development and AI specifically.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining. Let's just jump right in. What do you see happening with AI and software engineers' roles? Like, how are they going to be affected? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time to be in software development. AI, I think, has the potential to definitely transform the industry, and it's exciting to see how it can be used today. While also considering how it might be used in the future and how it'll impact people currently doing software development, people who want to get into software development. I think it's important to start just to kind of level set everyone to understand how AI is impacting software development today before we talk about the future impacts.
Yeah, good idea. Like, as far as like software developers today, what percentage of companies do you think are using AI to assist with their software development? Has this actually been around for a long time? Like, I know ChatGPT has actually been around for years, but it just took a while for the public to get on board. So how long has this been around?
Yeah, I would say, obviously, like you said, ChatGPT has been around for a while. I think AI kind of exploded with the GPT-4 engine being released and everybody trying it out and saying, oh, wow, this is amazing. And I think that has caused a lot more people to think about it and try it. As far as impacts on development specifically, I think you see Microsoft's big investment into OpenAI and ChatGPT. The GPT engine has now been incorporated into GitHub Copilot, which has access to all of the open source code that has been published on GitHub, which is, I'm sure, millions and millions of lines of code. And so by using that to train the AI, we can use the GPT engine to develop code and understand code and things like that. So that's pretty cool. And developers can use that right within Visual Studio and other development environments to automate certain repetitive tasks, to perform code reviews, hopefully catch defects quicker if you have the AI kind of double check your code. There's a lot of boilerplate code that gets written in certain circumstances, and the AI can definitely do that for you. So yeah, I think there's definitely some value, but from talking to engineers at our company, who use it on a regular basis, it doesn't always do a great job. So sometimes they'll ask questions and it gives the complete wrong answer. And maybe you have to rephrase the question and it gets a little bit better, but it can't always answer the question. So although it's helping, there's definitely some lost productivity with trying to use it as well. So at the end of the day, I think it's it's a making a positive impact today. I wouldn't call it transformative as of yet.
I know software development, right? It's such a huge field, right? Because every industry needs software development. Everyone at least has a website, right? And I'm sure a lot of industries use very custom software engineering. So do you see particular industries benefiting more from, you know, AI assisted, let's say, software engineering?
I don't think it's industry specific, but I will say that it's probable that a lot of large Fortune 500 type companies are not taking advantage of it. Just knowing from my past experience, from others, I've talked to many, many software engineers, whether they came from a consulting company or a large company. One of the things that's so common about large companies is they're a little bit behind when it comes to technology, whether that's, you know, older versions, legacy software languages and technologies. So it's unlikely that a lot of those companies are taking advantage of AI in their development practices. So, but less about industry specific, more about choices and forward thinking companies is going to impact who's using it and who's benefiting from it.
Okay. So let's just talk to me as if, you know, I'm a software engineer, right? I've never used any AI tools before, right? It's all just been me and, as I think most software engineers will say, a lot of Googling how to do certain things, right? How will this change the day-to-day? Like, what kind of interface does the AI have? Is it chat-based? Do I ask it like, hey, I'd like to remove this object 10 pixels to the right? And it's like, here's your code. You know what I mean? Can you break it down for me in basic terms?
There's a few different ways. One is, like you said, that chat interface. Hey, AI, can you write me an algorithm that does X, Y, Z? And maybe it spits it out and you paste it into your project. But another and probably more common use is the auto completion. So auto completion has been a part of software development for a long time. You type the name of an object, you type period, and you get all of the available methods that you can execute on that object. Now, AI will prompt you to finish the algorithm that you're writing or to write the next batch of lines of code based on what it can tell you're doing. So that's another way. And then a third way of interfacing with the AI would be feeding it the code and having it basically pasting it or into the chat engine or whatever it is, and having it tell you what the code's doing, tell you what's wrong with the code, how it could be better. So it's another way you can interface with it.
Okay, so is it limited to different software development languages? Is that the right term for it? Is it limited to, you know, JavaScript and Python, or is it just endless? Like, it's library.
I haven't used it for everything, obviously, but I believe it's basically endless. I mean, specifically, GitHub Copilot has access to all the public and open source code that's been published in GitHub, and that's going to span a very broad list of languages. So,
right, that makes sense. So, I was just going to switch the topic just a little bit. So, this sounds kind of to me like, for example, I'm sure most users and most listeners have heard of Grammarly, right? If you haven't, it's a Chrome extension, and now they actually have, you know, a desktop app that you can install, and it basically rewrites your sentences for you with commas and the correct periods and like, oh, you use passive voice. Like, oh, this is confusing. You should rewrite it like this, right? And as someone who's, I don't know, not a grammar geek, right? But I care, right? It's almost like a crutch. It's like, oh, now people aren't actually learning when to use punctuation, right? Now the computer just does it for them. So is this a problem in this space? People aren't actually going to learn because it's like, oh, I'll just get a basic software engineering job. I'll just monitor the AI basically, right? And then that's all I do.
Yeah. And I think the problem with it today is potentially different than the problem in the future. And what I mean by that is today, unlike Grammarly, I think you're pretty sure that when it adjusts your grammar, that it's correct.
Right.
With AI today, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes the AI is wrong. And so that could create a problem for developers who are unable to see that it's right or wrong. So in the future, perhaps as AI has improved, it is much more likely correct in the work that it does. Yeah, it could be that there's a role of simply orchestrating the AI to do the development. The question is, does the person doing that then learn? Well, they're going to learn different things, I guess. That they're not going to necessarily care so much how to write an algorithm to do, ABC, but they're going to know how to manage the AI to do what they want to accomplish.
I see. Okay. And what that kind of brings to mind, because I'm in marketing, I'm more of a marketer. And what that kind of brings to mind is there's softwares like Salesforce and like HubSpot and Pardot. And, you don't actually have to code, but you do actually have to be competent enough to know you're not making mistakes, right? And you have to still understand the whole framework, right? So it sounds to me like you're saying the job won't go away. It will just be adjusted.
Yeah. And I think too, there's low level things or, repetitive tasks, boilerplate code, et cetera, that AI is helping with today. As that expands and does more lower level software development work, there's still that higher level software development work that will need to be done by those higher level engineers, the architecture of the project itself, a lot of the technical decision making. But you can imagine a higher level developer being able to accomplish a lot more if all they have to do is, the architecture pieces of it and the planning and the structure, and the AI kind of fills in the rest.
Okay. So give me an example, because truthfully, I couldn't tell. I've worked with a lot of developers in my time, right? I've submitted a lot of tickets to dev and they tell me, it'll be a month and a half, right? and I've never really understood the difference between a high level developer or sure. and a low level developer. Like you say, like architecting, mm-hmm. What do you mean? And what is it? Are those different skill sets?
Yeah, it's definitely a blurred line there between development and architecture. But, there's definitely software developers who have the skills and experience to modify existing software to do different things. They can add a feature. They can fix a bug.
Right.
They can modify that code. There's a higher level skill that knows how to get started on a brand new project. There's not a line of code written. How do I get started? How do I structure this project? What design patterns is a concept in software development? What design patterns are we going to use? And that can get really complex to talk about, I think, in this podcast. But I don't know that the AI at this point or in the near future will be able to make some of those decisions, given all the nuance that it requires.
And how does your software engineering team feel about these tools? What's the response from them from using, Microsoft GitHub or AI assisted tools? Are they excited? Are they confused? Are they, what's the feeling from actual users?
I would say it's mixed. I think everyone is happy that as a company, we pay for the tools that they can use, including GitHub Copilot, that we encourage them to try it out and to take advantage of it where possible. I think being on the cutting edge is very key for any software development company. And this is now one of those areas. So some are having more success with the AI than others. I think there's there's a learning curve. Not everyone has the time to invest in understanding that. But one of the things we do at Emergent Software here is we have lunch and learn times and talk shops where the engineers can get together and share. And this is one of those topics that we've dealt with a couple of times. We revisit every once in a while to kind of give the latest and greatest about, you know, how, what we're using, what are the use cases that we can use AI to help increase and improve our productivity.
I see. Okay. So as a real life use case that I've come across as a marketer, I am continually frustrated by like scheduling softwares. Like there's Calendly, there's Chili Piper, there's other ones, right? And they never have quite all the features I want. So when I hear AI software development, right, you know, one of the things that comes to mind is like, oh, well, perfect. I'll just tell AI, like, this is the software I want, and you will just build it, right? But I'm sure, like you're saying, we're not there yet. But do you think there would be a time when someone like me, who is not a software engineer, who just knows basic HTML and CSS, could realistically, you know, make their own software and then sell it?
Perhaps. In the who knows how distant future, but you can imagine a scenario where perhaps there's even an interface, maybe a piece of software that allows you as a person with an idea to document that idea. That's something that we do in general as part of a software development project. And we have a group of people called technical product owners that work with clients to define what the requirements of the software are and organize it in a way that can be understood by engineers. Something very similar could be done for the AI. I could imagine that scenario. If it becomes that easy, I question whether or not you could sell that piece of software. However, maybe it's more of a scenario in the future where you build software for yourself to use. It's just so, becomes so easy in your specific right. use case and requirements. And quite possibly you're starting with some base, some framework that is designed to allow you to customize using AI.
I see. Okay.
That seems like they have the Calendly of the future allows you to add features. Now, I will say about software just in general, and Calendly is a good example. Companies develop software and with a small team, they get successful. They grow. Now all of a sudden they lack the nimbleness that they did at the beginning, and the ability to continue to iterate and add features decreases right. over time. So that's where those frustrations come in, and yet they become the big gorilla, as you will. Everybody uses Calendly. So why right. isn't there something right. that has more features? Well, it's hard to come in and replace Calendly. So
yeah, that's a good point. And I'm sure. Actually, I guess I'm not sure. Like you're saying with these big, yeah. these bigger companies, it's more difficult to add features. Is that because this new feature has to play nicely with all this different kind of code? Or is it just because, oh, now we have lawyers and red tape, and now we have investors and a board that we have to get approval from?
I think it's more the latter. It's that red tape.
Okay.
So that's what's interesting. Like, what you talked about, like, I want a better Calendly. I want a piece of software that can do even more. You know, I think you talk about disruptors. That's like, everybody wants to talk about disruptor in this industry. Some new piece yeah. of software disrupts it, right? It changes everything. Right. And I think that is one of the promises of AI is when it, if it does make it that simple to create software, it's just going to be nonstop disruption to the point where you basically have a piece of software that works the way you want it. But if we all end up on different pieces of software, I don't know how that works either. So
right.
it's hard to quite cast the vision for what that looks like.
That makes sense. And another thing that, like, because I have a toddler, right? He's 2 years old. And, you know, when I was a kid, right, I played plenty of video games. And you know, it was very basic, right? And now I think, like, I look at the world around me and where it's headed, and I think, like, oh, like, he'll just play a video game that teaches him how to code. Like, it will be fun. And, like, and I actually haven't even researched if there is such a video game. I know, you know, Minecraft, I've heard that parents encourage their kids to play Minecraft because it promotes so many different like problem solving skills and creativity and whatnot. It sounds like AI assisted stuff could be good for kids to like, oh, I know a little bit and I kind of have an idea. It will expose them maybe at an earlier age and make the barrier of entry lower. Well, what do you think about that? Is that true?
I think it's possible. I think the barrier to entry to being able to develop, say, games, which is where a lot of kids would focus, has come down significantly in the last number of years. Continues to come down in the sense that there are incredible frameworks that exist to, say, develop a 3D game with very little programming experience and have it up and running and playing and testing very, very quickly. So maybe AI just takes that much further.
Interesting.
There definitely are lots of ways in which kids can learn programming today. Code.org, Scratch from MIT is a huge one. I have a 9-year-old who spends a lot of time on Scratch developing.
Cool. I'll have to look that up. So you're saying they develop, your kid actually develops games that they can then play.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's way cool. I'll have to look that up. So how do you see this stuff affecting like public education? Like I know when I was in high school, I had a computer class, right? And they taught us how to use PowerPoint, Word, and some Excel. And, you know, it wasn't very advanced. It wasn't very helpful, right? My courses in college were much more in depth, right? But do you think this makes it easier for teachers to teach it? And by this, I mean AI. Like, do you think AI makes it easier and more accessible for say, like a public education?
No, I'm not sure. I do think that education, that software engineering is an important field that should be incorporated in all levels of education, that everyone should get exposure to it for sure. I don't know if AI will help teachers teach it. I think there's a lot of tools out there already that aren't being necessarily taken advantage of by teachers to teach software engineering, because I don't think every teacher is well placed to teach software engineering. But I think because the tools exist, because the platforms exist, they really just need to expose their students to it. And maybe AI increases that, I guess. It provides more tools for them to use. It's
right. That's a good point. I guess they could already be using this Scratch software, right? And if they're not using that, they're probably not going to pick up the next AI tool.
Right. I think there's plenty that exists today to expose kids to software engineering. And I think it's
right. Really important to do. Okay, cool. I know we talked about before, when we were kind of going over what we're going to talk about on the podcast, your concern of if low-level engineers just become AI babysitters, how will they ever develop into high-level engineers? Can you talk about that concern? Like what concerns you about that? How would people get around that?
Yeah. So yeah, that is one of the kind of potential big impacts that AI will have on software development is the career path from junior to senior engineer. And I think a lot of that has to do with what we have junior engineers do today. We have them do lower level engineering tasks. That makes sense. They can learn that and then slowly advance to more complex tasks. But if the AI is being used for all of those lower level tasks, how do you get started? And I think that's something that's going to have to be solved. Again, it's not something that's happening today yet, but I think people will figure out a good way to educate junior software engineers. One possibility might be job shadowing more, kind of co-coding, like have a junior just kind of overlooking a senior software engineer today with remote work and screen sharing.
Right.
And all that is so easy. You don't have to actually sit at the desk and try to stare at somebody's screen. You can watch what they're doing. They can talk while they're doing it. it's a mentorship. They maybe get, you know, hey, why don't you take a turn at the wheel and see if you can drive, you know, and maybe that's more of the approach of training juniors versus just, you know, assigning them lower level tasks that otherwise that can now be automated.
Right. Okay. So Mark, the biggest question that, you know, this episode hopes to answer is, will AI decrease or is it going to increase jobs?
Yeah. And specifically talking about jobs and software
jobs development. In software development. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Cause I think there are doomsayers out there who argue that software development will disappear or greatly reduce because AI will be doing all of the work. And I think that that's a fallacy that analysts and people jump to when they think about productivity improvements and technological advancements just in general. There's a few examples we can kind of look at. One that kind of is in that lines up with that kind of perspective, right? Like farming, for example. As productivity increased and technological advances were made in farming, you could see today that there's a lot fewer farmers than there used to be. So obviously a lot fewer farming jobs.
Right. Like one farmer can now farm 200 acres.
Or much, much more.
Right.
And but I think that the what's unique about farming in that case is that there's a limit to how much farming makes sense to do. There's only so much food we need to produce to feed all the Americans, right? In America, you know, and in the world, all the farming that's done in the world, and there's more food that's produced than is actually needed. So much of it just gets wasted.
There's a limit of land, right?
There's a limit of land and there's a limit of how much farming it makes sense to do. Those limits don't exist in the world of software development, which is really driven by business processes and ideas. You said it yourself earlier. I have this idea. I want to make Calendly better. I want to have a better calendar software product. I don't think there's any end to that. And I think that as we increase productivity in software development, we actually lower the cost to do the software development, which will then open up a lot more budgets to spend on software development. If it costs less, a lot more people will choose to do it. One of the things that comes up a lot when we're talking to prospective clients about solutions to their problems is we consider, well, we could do it with custom software development or we could purchase this package software. And the package software always costs much less. It's just limited in what it can do. It doesn't have the features that you want it to do like Calendly. So it may cost a lot more, but it's something that you have to evaluate. Is it worth it for that flexibility? But if the cost comes down on that custom software versus the package software, obviously the more businesses will choose that custom software. And then it'll just be that much more work to do. And so even though AI is helping software developers, you know, and doing so much of the coding, there's just so many more ideas and business processes and problems that can be solved with software development that I think it's only going to increase the number of jobs.
Cool. Well, yeah, that's maybe not a radical take, but it definitely, because of how rational it sounds, right? But it definitely seems to go against the grain of what a lot of people are saying that, you know, software engineers are losing their jobs. And you already talked about how that's, you know, Google, Microsoft, they overhired. And then during the pandemic, they had to kind of lay some people off. So
other example, maybe.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mentioned farming and that kind of was evidence for this idea that productivity and technological advancement, you know, causes job losses. But I think another area to look at is manufacturing. And a lot of studies have shown that even though higher productivity growth may lead to losses in a specific industry or a specific company overall, that higher productivity leads to lower prices, which leads to increased demand, which more than offsets the kind of the employment, the overall employment lowering effect of that higher productivity. So yes, although some people lose their jobs, they can be retrained and go to a different manufacturing job. And in the end, there's more jobs created. And if you look at the overall productivity that we've had since the Industrial Revolution, it's incredible. Right. And yet we don't have, you know, a lot of problems with jobs, at least here in America and much of the world right now. There are plenty of jobs. So, right. So how does that compare with software development? Well, in software development, industry doesn't matter much. Even the types of projects you're working on, there's definitely value for software engineers to, you know, work again on a project that's similar to a project they've done before. They take some of their learning that they gained from that to the next project. But at the same time, it's much more fluid than, say, manufacturing. And they can move from one industry to another, from one project to another. And our teams do that all the time. And it's not that big a deal to make that shift. And so I think that fluidity allows, like in manufacturing, where the overall jobs or the overall amount of manufacturing increases, but there's this individual kind of pain that happens. I think that's mitigated by the fact that software development is much more fluid. So if like manufacturing, more development gets done, it should just mean more jobs and not a lot of people losing jobs ultimately.
Yeah, that example reminds me of something I found, learned recently. I never thought about that, you know, before cars were widespread, right? To travel, right? You had a horse and buggy, right? If you wanted to travel long distances or quickly, right? And so there were jobs, you know, removing the horse poop from the streets, right? And there were people who installed the horseshoes, people who fixed the carriages. You know, it was this whole industry revolving around horses. And then cars became cheap and affordable. And then overnight, right? Horses were gone, right? It's like, why would I want a horse? And, but yeah, overall jobs increased because it's like, oh, well, more people can afford a car than they could ever afford to feed a horse. And so now we have a lot more mechanics and we have more manufacturing. So it makes sense. Everyone always thinks like, oh, this will be the end of an industry. It's like, no, it just shifts a little bit.
It shifts. And in some cases, it's more painful than in others. And, you know, if you're so knowledgeable about horseshoes and that disappears, and now you need to make something different, that you might need to be retrained. You might need more education. You might need to move to a different location, right? In software development, 90%+ of us are working from home.
Right.
our computer is all we need. We can shift from one project to another in a matter of minutes or seconds. It's just a matter of thinking about something different. So it's much more fluid. And so I think the individual pain that happens sometimes with technological advancements will be much less as AI changes software development.
Just to kind of wrap things up, I know a lot of people, a lot of software engineers might be working for jobs right now. And I know you're really involved in recruiting and vetting who you guys hire. Do you have any advice? Do you have any tips for people who might be job hunting about what kind of skills they could develop or what the vetting process looks like and how to maximize your chances of being hired?
Yeah, I do have advice. I recently read specifically that AI will radically reshape software development and force software developers to acquire new skills in order to stay relevant. And I'm like, well, that's true, but it's nothing new. It's always been the case in software development. The industry changes so much and so fast that anyone who steps away from developing code, includes myself, quickly has their knowledge outdated. I can't just jump back in. It's changed so much since I was developing code. And then there's a lot of development, as I kind of alluded to or talked about earlier, at large companies. It's slow moving. It's outdated technologies. And, you know, those developers there are learning, first of all, less relevant stuff and also at a much slower pace. And if AI is just going to accelerate that change in the industry, developers who find themselves in those positions need to get out of there and get something and do something different. I've heard time and again from employees at Emergent that they learn so much more in the same amount of time at Emergent, working on lots of projects using the latest technologies than they did at their previous company. And this has to do with our approach of, again, working on the latest technologies, keeping people productive on various projects, and providing time for developers to grow and stay on top of trends. And then a big part of that is AI. And we are going to stay on top of it. And the engineers that work at Emergent Software will be able to be on the cutting edge still. So again, as a developer, if you find yourself somewhere that's slow moving or you're stuck in old school technology, you're at the risk of having your job obsoleted. I think if you're on the cutting edge, if you're using AI to augment your development, or you're able to at least try that out, then you're in a good spot.
Awesome. Yeah, those are great tips. I definitely know that in my experience in digital marketing, that's absolutely true. Like people who work for big companies, when they try to work for a startup, it's just drastically different, right? Because you're, and I'm not saying you guys are a startup, but it's like, or you work for an agency, right?
Now you're small enough, we're nimble, like I was talking about
earlier. Right, exactly.
They lose that nimbleness. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I have found my job satisfaction to be so much higher at nimble, smaller companies where you can make a real difference and you can actually grow. And I think that sense of fulfillment is worth maybe not having the stability of a company like, you know, Google. Well, then again, they just laid off a bunch of people, so maybe it's not that stable.
You know, I think if you can get a job at one of the big Google, there's a term for the group of companies. It's Facebook, Google, Amazon, Microsoft. If you can get a job there, I don't think you're doing the wrong thing. And they are innovative companies, even though they are large. It's going to be a different path than maybe working at a small consulting company. And I think different people are suited for that versus the other. I think the danger is finding yourself at a large company where their specialty is not developing software.
I see. Okay. You're like an in-house developer.
They don't know how to do it. They don't know what engineers need or truly care about.
Right.
I mean, I speak to a lot of engineers and it's not always about the money. It's about fulfilling work. And that's true about all jobs, but engineers really want to work on interesting projects. They want to learn new technologies. They want to stay on top of things and they want to work with other really good engineers. And so that's usually not found at a Fortune 500 company that in the finance industry or something.
Right. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me, Mark. I really appreciate your time and your expertise. Any like closing notes, any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks again, Derek, for having me on the show. It's been fun. Like talking about technology. I just end with that, you know, I think AI gets a lot of people afraid. And I think that's true about every technology, every new technology we've ever had to learn to embrace. I think that we need to embrace AI. And I think that people need to figure out how to incorporate it and how to benefit from it. I think just like any technology, don't get left behind.
Right. And if you're pitching a new project to investors, just sprinkle in the words AI and they just love it.
It's no longer big data.
Even right.
Machine learning is starting to.
Right. Machine learning is big for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And who knows? I think AI is real and legit. I think it won't be one of those just buzzwords. I think it's more accessible. I think big data is one of those funny ones where people don't even quite understand what it means. And it isn't actually very relevant to most companies, small and mid-sized companies. So I think AI is relevant to everyone.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Mark. Hope to have you on the podcast again sometime.
Sounds great. That'd be awesome.
Okay. Take care.